What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
I'm John Batchelor, the Friends of History Debating Society. And Mr. Zakas has a spoodle named Dallas, who for weeks and weeks now has demonstrated his philanthropy, his affection, basically his warmth towards a magpie family that is striking because magpies have a reputation of being extremely hostile. They are aggressive and they're territorial, and it's been spring and then it turns summer, and they come to the backyard every morning, and Dallas is there, and then they have a working relationship, sharing food, sharing water, leaving each other alone, worrying about each other. It's odd. It's an odd story. So I went looking for an explanation for this bizarre behavior, and I think I found one. Jeremy, I go to the Financial Times, pointing to an article in Science Magazine. The argument goes like this. Despite evidence that animals like octopuses are intelligent, we humans tend to overlook the cognitive ability of other animals. But birds, descended from flying dinosaurs, have also had to battle to survive, and the cognitive gap may be narrower than we assume. Corvids, that's the family that magpies exist in, corvids can count, fashion, and use tools, and engage in social play. Parrots can mimic language and even learn the meaning of words. Nutcrackers can cache thousands of morsels, retrieving them later when food is scarce. A mighty feat of spatial memory. That some of us still throw the term bird brain around as a barb points to poor cognition in our own species. What we have here is a study that suggests that corvids, among all the birds, are the top, and that they have come by a route completely different than the one we did as mammals to cognition. Dallas is a mammal. And I note, engage in social play. Wouldn't you say that was a general way of describing how Dallas and the magpie family have been treating each other these many weeks?
Yes, in fact, that's exactly how they've been treating each other. And in fact, I've always joked that you can actually tell when Dallas is thinking something. If you watch the magpies too, you can almost tell by their eyes when they're trying to work through something, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do next. And often it ends up in being some kind of interaction, or as we saw just a couple of weeks ago, the magpies actually were playing with one of Dallas's balls, and Dallas allowed them to play with that tennis ball, even though they're pulling that tennis ball skin off and kind of having a good old time. So you can actually tell that there is a bit of social interaction, but there is a lot of cognitive skill happening behind it. But we've also seen, too, where these magpies have actually protected our property from other birds, such as crows and sparrows. But when Dallas is there, they actually sometimes are subservient and let Dallas actually be the one that protects the property. So as you said, John, there's actually a lot of cognition going in between them, that the interplay between Dallas and these magpies is very, very strong, but it's also very, very deliberate. Nothing seems to happen by randomness or just by happenstance. Even the timings, too, when the magpies turn up, they turn up when they know that Dallas is normally going to be outside, or when Dallas is going to be fed, or if Dallas is typically going to be in the yard to play. And as we've also spoken about on this show a few times, when Dallas hasn't been outside and seen the magpies actually land, sometimes when we just let Dallas out a little bit later, we've seen the magpies actually come up to our back door looking for Dallas inside. So there is definitely a lot going on with these magpies. And just my personal experience with magpies growing up, especially in Adelaide next to a national park, the magpies were the ones you could virtually train to be hand-fed. They were always kind of your friends, but they were also kind of very protective of the property too, so chasing other birds away. We've seen them attack snakes, and they are very, very skilled at what they do. So I have no doubt about this study. I suspect that magpies are right there at the top of the cognitive train, and we're seeing it. We're just seeing it live here with Dallas.
Now, Dallas, I want to give Dallas credit. I have a couple of spaniels. One is 7. Little younger than Dallas, and another is 9 months. The 9-monther, I can watch him learn. I see it happening. He watches his bigger brother. And when Sailor does something, Charlie watches it, records it like a hard drive, and then he goes over and imitates it if he can. Exactly the same move. So treating them for breakfast in the morning, I've taught them, as the dog trainer suggests, that they should sit and wait for me to give them permission after I put the bowl down and back away a little bit. Sailor does that like a dream. He knows exactly what to do. Charlie studies him every morning and then imitates it, except for Charlie doesn't quite control the spontaneousness once he's sitting there and the food's on the floor. It's very difficult to wait. And so he's learning from his older brother. What this tells me is they don't have limits about learning. I could teach him. I could pretend to be a Sailor. Now, we know dogs are smart. We didn't know that dogs would recognize a bird as a playmate. Did we know that?
I don't think we did. And although there are examples, even here in Australia, where we've had magpies and dogs who've become best of friends, but it's interesting. It's kind of amongst the mix of magpies and kangaroos or dogs and kangaroos kind of mix as well. But I don't think we've ever really recognized it as such. It's just that's been a nice novelty over the years to hear about, maybe in the news once in a while. But I think personally, this is the first time I've actually been able to see it live and see it myself and really recognize it now. But it is something that I think, as more studies will probably be conducted, there actually is a lot more deeper sort of connection that we ever realize. And that shows a lot of intellect between two sides there to actually make it work.
The Crow family, how are they treating Dallas and the magpie?
This is the amazing part. The crows, if they see Dallas and the magpies there, the crow family will sometimes try and come into our backyard. Of course, it never ends well that the magpies come and chase the crows away. But if it's just the magpies outside, the crows always stay away from the backyard. They never approach, never come anywhere near. So what I think is happening is if the crows do see Dallas there, because Dallas doesn't always have any opposition to the crows. He kind of lets the crows stay on the fence. He doesn't really pay them much attention. He doesn't play with them like the magpies, but he doesn't really care too much for them. But I think the crows have in their minds that Dallas might actually kind of allow them to come into the backyard, even when the magpies are there, and kind of be like, I guess, the protector or the negotiator between the magpies and the crows to allow them to land in the backyard. While this hasn't quite happened yet, and you know the crows will probably keep trying and hoping that that will be something one day, I do think that there is actually an element there where the crows themselves have cognitively picked that Dallas being there might be the only chance they have to actually come into the backyard without the magpies coming in and chasing them off. But you know, it's not quite there yet, but who's to say that maybe sometime down the track, the crows, the magpies and Dallas can all actually interact in the backyard at exactly the same time. And the interesting thing is too, John, in the last 2 years, the crows haven't stopped trying. So obviously in their psyche, in their mindset too, they think that the more they try, the more that it may actually happen one day. So we'll wait and see. We'll watch this space.
Jeremy Zakas, New South Wales. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.